I did see someone, or I think it was your tweet or maybe your brother, saying you'd interviewed somebody who's so far down the rabbit hole that, you know, it was another level.
He's got the advantage that he's dying of cancer, so he doesn't have to.
Yeah,
he doesn't have to, he doesn't have to pull his punches or pretend.
Yes.
That we're all in unicorn land.
Right. Yeah.
Which
I
is
mean,
good.
I will tell. I can't. You know, I'm not going to watch it because I just don't think it will be helpful.
No, it's not like that. No. It's
right,
not.
Maybe I will. Okay. Maybe I will.
No. Don't. What? There's one I did with Francis Hunt.
Okay.
Which you definitely shouldn't watch because that's completely blackpilled. Although it gives you good advice on how to survive the apocalypse, but the Jonathan Marsley one you'll like because it's got a lot of spiritual stuff in it and it's very interesting. It's a beautiful thing. It is the best podcast I've ever done.
Oh right, well and, okay,
and
ev- fine.
Everyone
fine.
Knows it. Yeah, that's.
Good. I didn't take kindly to that tweet either, but you know. I'll let it go.
What's that?
But as I say,
I love all my children.
Yeah.
You are not dying of cancer, and you are not Jonathan Marsley. So you know, and that's it. So I wanted to talk to you first about the extraordinary experience I had at the weekend.
Oh.
Where I went on the Freedom March through London.
Okay.
Were you even aware that it had happened?
No, I was aware it happened. Yes, yeah. No, I heard it was well attended. I mean, I did have to read extra on, you know, alternative websites about it. No, I heard it was well attended. Yes, I realise I probably should have been on it. I'm not, you know.
I wouldn't risk it now. I wasn't guilt tripping you.
Yes, no, I get that.
Lots of people I know were... There was a sort of when we gathered beforehand in Hyde Park, there was a palpable air of fear, in that it felt like being in occupied Europe. It really did. The police were all around you and they were monitoring you, and you know, so here you were in a park on a I don't think it was a
sunny
day.
Yeah, it was quite a nice day.
It wasn't a bad day. So people were out there taking the air, but you were very conscious that the police were just waiting for a chance to drag you off and arrest you or whatever. And occasionally they'd come over to you and ask these intrusive questions like, "What are you doing here?" And I think it sort of underline the surreal nature of our experiences in the last 12 months. Can you imagine just over 12 months ago going to the park and being questioned by police about
I know
it's extraordinary. Anyway, so we had this big march, and I don't know how many people attended. Some people say it was in excess of 50,000. There were lots of people there.
Yes.
And we at a given signal, smoke signals, it was all quite exciting.
Right.
We marched up Park Lane through the block traffic, which we'd brought to a standstill, and we got amazing amounts of solidarity from the drivers. If I'd been in traffic and I'd been trying to get through and I hadn't known the cause, I think I would have resented the marchers. But these people, particularly the bus drivers, they were all beeping their horns, giving us high fives through their windows and stuff.
It was really touching. I did read that. All right, yeah.
So we marched down Oxford Street, and again, it was nerve wracking because you didn't know whether the police were gonna close in on either side and kettle you in, which is what they do. They kettle you and they keep you in an enclosed space, and they won't let you get out to go for a pee. So you have to either pee yourself or pee in the bottle or whatever, and you don't get any water, and it's a punishment. It's designed to sort of terrorize you. They didn't do that on this occasion, maybe because the crowd was too large, maybe because
they've been getting some bad media, right? So
well, there's that, but I don't think that's going to put them off, because I think where we're going I think the state wants more than anything to crush dissent from those of us who don't believe that lockdowns are good and who don't buy the narrative. They don't care about Black Lives Matter. They really don't. I mean, that that pantomime in Bristol yesterday, on Sunday,
yes,
was Antifa. It was the Black Bloc. It was the radical left. And I saw some very disturbing footage of one of the rioters, alleged rioters, sneaking off and having friendly conversations with the police, and then going back to, in other words, he was either an agent provocateur or he was MI5 or whatever, but there was something very suspect about this supposed spontaneous Kill the Bill event in Bristol. And I think its ultimate purpose was to discredit protests like the one on Saturday, to give the government the excuse to go in hard, pretending that, look, the country's in anarchy. And I think a lot of people who've been brainwashed by the Daily Mail and the BBC and so on actually believe this. They believe that people protesting for freedom are a menace and are in the same group as the Black Bloc, you know, hard left, Antifa and so on. Mm. And that they think that the government's new draconian bill on where you can get a 10,000 fine and 10 years in prison for just merely attending a protest is proportionate. This is where we're going. We're being manipulated horribly.
Well, I think a lot of people right now just want order and you know, conformism. So all the Tories in the shires, etc., who don't have to worry about an income overall, although they might be surprised when they
the middle
their
class
pension.
Is fine.
Yeah, their pension pot. Yeah, they want it all shut down, I would imagine. So yes, but I mean, it's good that it's well attended. I do think if they try and carry on for much longer, you will get more and more people going. You know, it's difficult to see where it's going. Did you light your candle last night? Did you reflect? Did you reflect on the year? You know,
if
like
I had a candle.
Yes.
I can. The only use for a candle involves Boris Johnson on all fours, naked. That's the only place I'd shove a candle. Or Matt Hancock, obviously. I mean, if Boris wasn't available. But before we go on to that, I just wanted to tell you the most disturbing thing about the march.
Go on.
It did not go. It went virtually unreported in the mainstream media.
It
was astonishing.
That's what they do. You know, it's manufactured.
We march through central London, a huge crowd, mm. peaceful crowd. Mm-hmm. By the way, the kind of ethnic mix was a lot more varied than you'd find on a Black Lives Matter rally.
White people,
sort of middle class white people.
Yeah,
and the same with Extinction Rebellion, which is about as white can be. Yes. These were the kind of people that the government professes to care about.
Yes.
So racial minorities, the working classes, and the government did not give a shit about them. The government and the media, in cahoots with the government, because all the government is paying them, the media just gaslit the nation into believing that this thing had never happened.
Yes.
It was just
airbrushed
nothing, it out
nothing
of,
to see
of the...
Here. Yeah, nothing to see here. Nothing happened. No, everybody's happy. Everybody supports what's going on. I know, it's crazy.
London wasn't brought to a standstill by this enormous rally, expression of public disquiet at government policy. No, just ignore it.
No, the mainstream media, as we know, I mean, it is frightening. I mean, it's just, I think Toby Young did something on it yesterday, didn't he? Saying how sort of disillusioned he was by people and institutions he previously had faith in. It was on that Lockdown Skeptics. They're completely in cahoots. But again, on the front of my Times today are three very serious looking women. I think the mother and her two girls lighting a candle. I didn't see a single candle lit on our road, and they were out banging for the nurses like this time last year. So this
they
idea.
Weren't.
Nobody. Nobody.
So no. What was supposed to happen yesterday? I mean, I wasn't really paying attention.
Well, we're all lighting candles
for whom?
Remember. For, I think, the people who died from COVID, which, you know, not all 120,000 of them died, for the people like, you know, the 90-year-olds that died of a really serious flu. Yeah, it's millions. They lit millions of candles in the form of a nationwide beacon of remembrance. I didn't see
it. I just don't believe it. I do not believe this one second.
Lies. The whole thing is lies. I mean, worryingly, I mean, you know, look, I only got the end of Priti Patel's interview today, and then I turn it straight off, because her final sentence was, as usual, the government have been saying for the whole years, we'll do, because they'd asked them the whole should I book a foreign holiday thing. And her answer, of course, is we will do whatever it takes as a government to protect our citizens. And it's like, no, you know, so there's no limiting principle on their power. You know, they're running around basically saying we'll do whatever it takes, no matter what the cost, no matter what the damage. Aren't we great? These guys are so totalitarian. Boris is so populist in a very bad way. I mean, I do think they do have a good strain of support out there from various.
They do. Those are the most disappointing people. The people who vote, as long as it's got Conservative on the tin, they'll vote for it. I mean, somebody tweeted out the other day, do we think that Boris Johnson is the greatest prime minister ever? Yeah. And he wasn't even saying it ironically.
No, I know. Well, look, I also think now, before I turn my ire, I also do think, I'm afraid, and they've done the polling on this, whether you believe the polling or not, is supposedly a lot of the Red Wall constituents support him. Although I sense that they break the lockdown themselves, but tell the pollsters that, yes, the lockdown is the greatest thing to ever happen, like places up in, you know, in that previously have voted Labour have now suddenly switched to an authoritarian Boris Johnson. Well, that makes sense, right? Because they wanted to be taken care of under Labour by a massive expansion of the welfare state. And now Boris has come in to take care of them in terms of furlough payments and to protect them from the virus. So it's not that, again, I would believe that you have this very weird alliance between very comfortable, as I said, Tory people living in the Shires, boomers living in the Shires, and a sort of kind of working class, previously Labour voting, Brexit voting people up north, which again is not necessarily something that you would necessarily have predicted, but you know, I'm sure there's all sorts of weird alliances. It's the people who want to be taken care of by government, who believe that they are entitled to use governmental power to shut down the lives of other people to protect them from a virus. Since when have people...
The people who voted for the NSDAP in 1933, maybe 35, 36.
This is new in terms of things I expect from my government. It used to be decent health system, decent education system, you know, maybe some public transport. Now it includes protect me from a virus. This is the first generation that feel that they're entitled to use governmental power to, you know, disproportionately receive protection from an actual virus. It's incredible. I've never seen it before. I mean, what can you say?
You've certainly explained the public's complicity in this, or the public's
I don't think they should be let off the hook.
No, they shouldn't. Mm. But where are you on the how have you gone down the rabbit hole yet? Are you
beginning to suspect? In terms of the Great Reset, or how much?
Well, and worse.
Well, I mean, I tell you what. Yesterday, again in the Times, there was a massive supplement. You know, they have these weird paid for supplements, and essentially, it was a big push on the Great Reset. All of it.
In the Times.
Yes. It was all like, you know, it had a big spread. I could nearly get it for you. It had a big spread on the amount of people who will need to be upskilled, you know, from their current job, who have been displaced. I think it was the word displaced from their current job has been displaced, as in it's been eradicated because of the lockdown. And they're now going to have to upskill. And it's, of course, all tech into these new wonderful techie skills. Lots of education, how all the education should be delivered through screens. Yeah, complete all great
that
reset
is,
stuff.
That is absolutely great reset stuff.
All
that is terrifying. They're not even hiding it anymore.
No,
And it's like, even now, even when they're not hiding it, people are still saying, oh yeah, but it's a conspiracy theory. Why would they do this? They say,
yes,
well, you don't need to know why. You don't need to know what their motivation is. You just look at the script, look at what they're doing. I find that argument the most frustrating, because it's like Hitler rolls his tanks into Russia, and people go, well, he'd never do that because it'd be insane to take on the Soviet Union. Look, he is actually driving the tanks into Russia now. Yeah, but what would his motivation be? I mean, people are weird.
Well, I think people are naive, and they don't like to think about the very dark side of human nature, which as we've said before, I basically assume as a given. So, you know, I mean, they want to usher in a new age of technocrats, a new age of planning. You can call it what you want, you know, a sort of an updated version of communism or whatever, where you have the elites who like to control people. And, you know, they, of course, they'll say it's for their own good. They always say it's for your own good. As I said, you know, they never say I'm doing it to punish you. I want to create year zero, said Mao, it'll be for our own good. So there are the control, these public health nutbags. If I hear another doctor or expert on my radio telling me what to do, I'm actually going to lose it. And these, you know, because lots of people have had so much faith in these people. These are the good guys, right? No, they're loving their newfound media fame. They want to do it for your own good. You know, maybe we can get them to eat certain things and exercise a certain day. And, you know, it's just the power is endless, right? There's no amount of power you can exercise, because it's all for your own good.
Why do people still listen to this crap? I mean, I won't have the BBC in my car all. I listen to podcasts, but why do you even listen to talk radio, given that they've basically sold the past? You know,
I think you mean LBC.
Talk radio is pretty much given up as well. They've given up the fight. You know, you'll get little bits of sort of licensed dissent, and then they're very much within the Overton window. They've been given a bollocking from upstairs. Whatever the instincts of the individual broadcasters, they're not on it anymore. They're not covering it. They'll talk about stuff like free speech or whatever, but they're not going to really engage with what's really going on, and that's sad. But tell me about your experiences with Nick Ferrari. I mean, it seemed that you were on in full Laura rant, and it was a good one, and then
don't
he just
like
cut
the
you
word
off
rant. But no, well, what happened? So you get the call the night before, and I haven't had any calls for a year, which I find suspicious, if I may say so myself. You know, it's the researcher. Oh, this bill, this crime bill is... No, they want to extend the lockdown powers for another 6 months to October, right? Even though they say everything will be lifted in June, for some reason, they want the lockdown powers extended until October. So, you know, will you come on to oppose it? I'm like, yeah, sure, fine. And it was a very short researcher call, I remember thinking. So anyway, it's kind of 8 o'clock the next morning, and I mean, Nick is supposedly going in hard on the Tories, like, as in, you know, it shouldn't be 6 months, and they're getting the opposition. Like, he brings in again another public health nut beforehand, you know. Oh, it's still dangerous, this COVID out there, it's still dangerous. And you're thinking, this is winding me up even more. So anyway, I mean, he you know, he sets you up with the quick intro question. And I mean, of course, I oppose a 6 month extension, but I basically said that they were morally degenerate, that the lockdown was evil, disproportionate, you know, immoral, that this generation has completely sacrificed the next generation, you know, suicides are up. So I gave what I will call the very moral, you're selfish, you're evil. And then Nick is like, but a lot of our listeners would say, you know, with 120,000 deaths, it was necessary. And I'm like, well, it has to be proportionate. And Sweden hasn't locked down and blah, blah. And I think he did give me a decent amount of time, in fairness. But it was sort of, I felt a bit cut off at the end. And I just don't think he... Yeah, I just don't think he expected the this is evil, you know, this is moral, this is completely a moral language. What he wanted me to say is, yeah, well, you know, 6 months, like it is a little bit much now, and maybe until June. And, you know, what can you do? You know, we had the lockdown and it was necessary at the time. OK, thanks. Bye, Nick. And yeah, he just didn't see it coming. So it was, but it was one of those calls where, you know, when you're ended and you think that researcher's in trouble now. They're going to go back to him and go, how much did you, she didn't say anything that we wanted her to say, right? So I can tell that that's probably what happened. But oddly, talk radio got on to me later on that day. It was like, do you want to do something for 20 past one? I'm like, fine. It was on the protest. But Ian Collins actually turned it into an anti-lockdown speech. And I definitely felt he gave me a lot more time. So
that's interesting.
Yes,
but
I
do think that they are under pressure from their, yes, whatever. I mean, I'm sure that individually they're, you know, Simon, what's his face? Whatever.
Yeah, Nick Ferrari. Yeah.
I was about to say Simon Dolan, but of course not Simon Dolan.
No.
I know that various of the talk radio presenters are, yes, can be pretty good,
yeah,
but they've had their wings clipped. There's no question. Okay.
Yeah, I do think Julie Hartley Brewer is still going strong. I mean, she's probably the most. She's. I know you don't like. I know you don't like it.
She's
going
to get a white dotted line painted down her back if she's not careful.
Yeah, well, I know she's so
kind of straddling the middle of the road. It's like, yeah, on the one hand, she's anti-lockdown, and on the other hand, she's had the vaccine because she wants to go on holiday. It's not a very principled position, is it? When all your freedoms are being taken away, you know, and they're now talking.
It's honest, though. About, it is honest. Yeah, they're not getting their holidays anyway, vaccine passport or not.
I don't mind the brazen honesty of I love my yes, infinity pool and I want them to go on forever. I get that. But what I don't get is like, hang on a second. You are supposed to be one of the voices of skepticism, yes, and freedom, and really getting a jab, getting experimental mRNA into your veins, which the government is trying to make compulsory and give to children, is not really, yes, the best way of fighting the good fight, is it?
But in her defense, and then we'll move on, is that she is actually what I would say, she's gotten the vaccine and she's completely against any vaccine passport system, which I think is actually quite principled, right? She could say, I've got the vaccine. Everybody else needs to get the vaccine. This is our only way out.
That,
yes,
would make her a fascist.
So. Yeah, well, okay,
that
sure,
would, that
I
would
know.
Make a fascist.
What can you do? You know, throw me a bone.
You're congratulating somebody for not being, yeah, a fascist. Actually, in these times, it is
quite
not
big,
being,
yeah,
a fascist.
No, I feel like, because basically we won't be going on holiday anytime soon for various different reasons, including that we're spending money on different things. I feel like I can really get on my high moral ground now and just say, cancel all the holidays. Nobody, how dare you go to France this year and bring back some strange variant? Haven't we all suffered enough? I'm going to really crank that up to the friends and family, especially the boomers. No, you're not going to your second home in France, Mr. Boomer Lady. You know, how very selfish of you. This is this kind of stuff that we could deploy, right? Because it suits us.
I want
right?
you
it suits
to.
Me.
Do you know who our friend is? Our unlikely friend.
God.
Which world leader right now is proving the most on our side?
I don't know. Someone from Hungary?
Uncle Vlad. Putin, do you see? No. I mean, everyone.
This is why you get abuse on Twitter.
Putin, no, well, yeah, I don't care. I mean, I absolutely don't. I've done a brilliant podcast. I say it myself, he was fantastic.
Yeah.
With, do you ever listen to Irreverend Pod?
No. No,
it's absolutely. I mean, it's following up the Jonathan Marsley one would have been, yeah, awful. But this guy rose to the occasion. He's a curate, a Church, okay, of England curate. But he's on our side. And
right,
the two other vicars on his pod. So they're obviously Christians, but they're proper Christians. They actually believe in God, which, yeah, is unlike most of the C of E. Because they're high church
yes,
Anglicans. And so they believe in God, and they probably say Our Father, which art in heaven, which is always a good thing,
okay,
rather than, you know, who art,
right,
and or who is. That would be even worse, wouldn't it? And they are incredibly skeptical about the lockdown, on the vaccines, and so on. Why am I telling you this? I think we're in a massive spiritual struggle right now.
Oh, absolutely.
And I wanted to tell you this. This, you don't like it because it's really depressing, but you're going to have to do it because he's one of your lot. He's bang on the money. Reread the letter that Cardinal Archbishop Vigano wrote to President Trump last year.
I saw it tweeted.
It is extraordinary how prophetic it is. It's absolutely terrifying. It's reading the Book of Revelations the day after it's all come true. It's like that. It's powerful. And what I found particularly interesting, so I read this letter and I thought, I wonder if he's done the interviews. And has done an interview. I mean, he's mainly an Italian speaker. I mean, he's not going to have the dialect or anything. And anyway, I wouldn't get him. But I read a transcript of the interview, and it's really interesting. He talks about the deep church. Do you know what the deep church is? Have
I
a guess.
Know about the deep church, yes.
Oh, do you?
Yeah,
you
do. Of course. No, there's a big split. I assume I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I mean,
More than a split. The guy who is currently your pope, the leader of your church, is basically the Antichrist. I mean, Bergoglio, Pope Francis is the deep church.
I
a new perspective. How Pope Benedict, maybe there was something much, much shadier than we ever realized.
He was pushed out. I know the whole thing. I just, I can't get sucked into that as well. It's all
part and parcel of the same thing though, Laura.
The deep
church is very much on with the Great Reset.
Yeah, no, I
and
agree.
The smearing of Cardinal Pell, who is a brilliant man. Heroic man, and the Catholic Church destroyed him. The establishment.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some very bad hombres in the Vatican. There's no doubt about that. Now you are breaking up a little bit on me for the last couple of minutes, but I think you're back. No, Cardinal Serra is another good one. He was unsurprisingly also pushed out. I think he was forced to resign or something because he was tipped to be the next pope. He also wrote against lockdowns, I think, again, pretty much last year. Again, laying out how unbelievably anti-Christian it is, how it's, crushing freedom. It's just that they want to turn the plebs into slaves. It's not anything new. It's been tried before, in a way. It'll be tried again. It's disappointing that a lot of people are obviously going along with it, but I think eventually the penny will drop. I will reread that speech, and as I said, Cardinal Serra is a good one. There are lots of opposition out there. It's just as you always say, the mainstream media never cover it, right? Then instead you get Justin Welby has said that you should wear your mask, as opposed to the 15 other incredibly educated theologians who say, no, this is a really bad idea. This is completely anti-Christian. It goes against
humans.
Yeah.
There's 10%, I would say, 10% of us who are super well-informed have realized that only we can save ourselves because government ain't going to do it. I mean, you look at the opposition, the Labour opposition are at least as bad as the Conservatives, because they're led by a member of the Trilateral Commission, Keir Starmer, who's totally on board with the Great Reset. So, and then you've got these controlled opposition like the Brexit Party, Richard Tice, who, he makes the right noises here and there, but
ultimately
there
he
was
wants
sort
to
of shilling for the vaccine.
Ultimately, he wants to be a Tory MP. So how much use is he going
to do? There's really not much hope out there except the people in the underground people. I mean it's weird to think that I'm about the most prominent journalist speaking up for these people. It's
because
really bizarre. Why me?
Because people still perceive you as That you were part of the establishment. I think for me, before, you know, being doing all these and I didn't really know you that well, I would have thought, oh yeah, James, he's pretty establishment. He writes for the Spectator. He's totally, totally in there, right? Whereas I was never in there. I'm always an outlier. So I think you're seen as the kind of the most establishment out there person.
It's a bit like when David Icke, who used to be a footballer wasn't he a daytime TV presenter? When he suddenly started wearing turquoise talking about his David Icke stuff, although of course David Icke is right, and it's a bit like that. But I'm even though it's kind of hard to take a position where people are ridiculing you and you get tinfoil hat memes and you don't get a job on GB News because you're not controlled opposition. At the same time, I'm thinking, well, isn't the job of journalists to tell the truth?
I think it's the job of decent people, right, to tell the truth.
Yeah, decent people.
Yeah, but what this is, I think, in terms of, again, looking at as Toby said, people who up until now you sort of would have trusted to stand up for basic principles like freedom. So C.S. Lewis, I'm going to have to, it's been a while since I've brought him up because I've listened to a whole.
Oh, good. No, I'm glad you brought him back. Yeah.
Because
tell me.
I've listened to a whole lecture on a whole lecture series and I've read a lot of his stuff, not most because he's really prolific. But he has one small essay and then it was mentioned in the lecture called, I think it was called The Ring. So I'll have to reread it. And he really focuses on this idea of people who really want to be right in that inner circle. Okay, and obviously there's a number of inner circles. So in government, you'd have the Gove, Hancock, Boris, who else? Priti Patel circle. And then you'll have another circle like that. And then you'll have, and then there's Valance and there's all the medical dudes who want to be in that circle, right? Ferguson and Valance.
And in the middle.
Yeah.
It's a pentacle with a sacrificed goat on it, or maybe a sacrificed child, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Right? And then you have all the Tory sort of, as I said, press whose only aim is to protect Boris Johnson. And that really is that desire to be on this inner circle, and it could be bureaucrats, is really damaging, and it's sort of the cause of so much evil in the world, right? Because you end up making completely evil decisions simply because it's not even I followed orders. It's not even you have to do this or I'm going to shoot you. It's like I'm going to do this because I really, really want to stay really good friends at Michael Gove and I want to be in the circle. I want to be around the table. As I said, I'm going to reread, but I suspect that is what a lot of this is. And there's a protection racket around the circle and the protection racket around the circle.
Given that you know so much about C.S. Lewis, could you do us a kind of a piece for Conservative Woman with links? I know it'd be boring, but I wish you would because it's really helpful. Because I think a lot of us are looking for stuff that explains everything and gives us sort of guidance on how to, like, there's an Italian philosopher which I've never read him. Do you know about Ride the Tiger?
No.
I mean, I'm talking about something I haven't read yet. But what I've been told is that he takes the view. I think he wrote it in the 60s that culture is our culture is basically doomed. It's been overwhelmed. So our job is to ride the tiger. It's about survival. It's about finding a way of getting through to the other side. Well, I could be completely misrepresenting him. The point I'm making is that there are, I'm sure, lots of key texts out there that we can.
No, I'll tweet them out. But there is. There is loads of. I mean, listen to this for a difference. So during the war, the Second World War, C.S. Lewis gave a series of lectures. You know, it's called Mere Christianity on the BBC. I think he'd either, I don't know if it was lectures first and then he wrote up the lectures or the other way around. I think it was lectures first. And like everybody listened to it. You would be in the pub with, you know, the ordinary working class people. And if C.S. Lewis came out to give these lectures, Mere Christianity, people, the everything stopped to listen to this guy. And you're like, yeah, and now we watch, I don't know, what do people watch? Like Big Brother
or Bridgerton.
Strictly Come Dancing or something.
No, but
and this
you know
is
what?
Part of the problem.
Or Bridgerton.
Well, I like it.
But you see, of course, we all have our little bits of soma that we
yeah,
like.
Exactly.
But actually, what you are doing is you are. I mean, it's the cabal that creates this crap. You know, you think about what's going on here. What is Bridgerton is telling you that?
Yes.
Don't worry. Yeah. There was no decorum in 1805. They were just as bad as they were at least as venal as we are. They had What?
I'm not too sure it says that.
I think it does. Everyone shags around. Everyone shags around and like, you know, they let their hair down.
No, they don't. In fact, I've meant to write quite a blog on saying that actually people, Bridgerton is quite conservative and you're all kidding yourselves, but I haven't read it yet. Yeah, okay. I mean, all the main heroine, you know, is pure as the driven snow, gets married, and then her husband, who initially didn't want children, is then won around to having children. And yeah, it is. You could definitely write that it's quite a conservative. You can have a diverse cast.
That's interesting.
It's quite a conservative theme, I think. But yeah,
that's interesting because have you ever heard of Alan Watt?
No. I mean the boys sleep around, but I think that probably was true then, right? So there's no rule the boy, but not the ladies. No, that doesn't happen.
Alan Watt, who's well worth discovering. I only discovered him a week after he died, unfortunately. Right, and apparently, somebody said he mentions you on his podcast occasionally, and you should get him on your pod. And I thought, yeah, who is he? So I listened to one of his podcasts, his general guide to what's going on, and this has been going on for decades. And one of the themes he riffs on is that. TV. Somebody told me that they knew somebody who was in the CIA, deep level stuff. And the CIA person would never say anything about what he did. But all he said was, don't watch television.
Sure.
Never watch television. Yes. And actually, it is a brainwashing device. And what Alan Watt said was, if you watch films and TV programs, dramas and things, and you are able to cut yourself off from the enticing narrative. If you stop being distracted by the things that are meant to distract you, and you look at what themes are being pushed and how it's being pushed,
I agree.
You realize that it all tends towards the dissolution of marriage, it encourages casual sex. The whole business about inuring us to violence, using...
I never watch violent stuff, as you know. I completely agree. Overall, most television is there to degrade the culture. I can absolutely agree with that. But some of the stuff that you can watch now will be considered like proper pornography, right, 40 years ago. But now and again, because I think the true desire for humans is to have quite a conservative life, it gets in there despite themselves because they know that sells. But like, I don't watch Killing Eve and all that. And it actually annoys me when you get the whole, you know, violence against women is so bad. Yet the next opinion writer next week will say, God, that Killing Eve or whatever it is, whatever woman ends up sliced and diced in the middle of the field. You know, God, what great drama. I'm like, no.
Killing Eve, I
bet you watch Game of Thrones. I do not watch Game of Thrones. It's one of the few things, although I wouldn't ban him from watching it because he's man of the house. I have said to the husband, I was like, I really do not want you to watch Game of Thrones. This is very bad for your soul. You shouldn't be watching it. I don't care how they sell it. It's degrading.
I've never even heard of it. What's it about?
Oh God.
It's about a game.
Ages. It's a fantasy thing and there's a dragon and blah, blah, blah. No, I mean, I spend a lot of my time trying to find stuff
that goes blah, blah, blah.
Oh, it's so bad. It's like they kill, there's incest and they kill women and they kill pregnant women and they stab pregnant women and there's rape and there's all this garbage. And you're like,
it doesn't sound.
It's so bad.
I saw one, I think half an episode of Killing Eve.
Yeah.
And I just thought, this is toxic. Yes. It's toxic on the same level as, do you remember that drama series about, I mean, I think this was almost one of the nadirs of BBC.
Yes.
The series about the serial killer. And there's a policewoman the policewoman is played by the girl from The X-Files, isn't it? Gillian Anderson.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It's like he goes around murdering women, but he's kind of sexy at the same time.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, that is awful. You're sort of, it's clearly aimed at a female audience.
Yeah.
I don't think any man would watch this absolute tribe. Mm. And it plays on this dichotomy within women, you know, the sort of the rape murder fantasy.
Yeah.
And at the same time, the hunky guy. It's awful. It's sick.
No, I know.
It's absolutely a sign of a decadent culture.
Well, I watched Cruel so sometimes I rewatch films that I watched when I was like a teenager or whatever, back 100 years ago, and that I know I liked. And I rewatched Cruel Intentions. Have you ever seen this? Your Sarah Michelle Gellar is in it. Ryan Philippe is in it. Oh, and the girl I like, a nice blonde girl who did Sweet Home Alabama. Oh, you know her. I do like her. Anyway, I forget her name. Anyway, I rewatched
the young ones look the same to me.
In the cold light of day, and I just thought, this is properly demonic. I'm like, okay, the evil Sarah Michelle Gellar character sort of gets her comeuppance in the end. But if you were really reviewing it, you would say it was so small at the end that it wouldn't have put an audience off, right, from being basically completely evil. They sort of run, it's a reworking. It's a reworking of Cruel Intentions where, older actors were in it. It was set in France. And basically it's about this guy who tries to seduce this complete cad, rake, whatever you want to call him, who tries to seduce this virginal girl. He eventually does, but he actually also falls in love with her. But he's then being manipulated by the main demonic Sarah Michelle Gellar character. And it's not very subtle. Sarah Michelle Gellar is always in black and the virginal character is always in white. And yeah, again, you're looking at it and you're just like, and he also seduces and essentially ruins this other completely innocent girl. And I'm just looking at it going, this, as I said, is actually demonic. If you were an adult, you could get how, you know, that they painted quite an evil character quite appropriately. But a child, to show it to a teenager or someone in their 20s, God knows how I survived it. Would be Cruel Intentions. Oh, who is it? It's on Prime for free.
Is it a movie or a series?
Yeah, a movie. It's a movie, and I mean, the thing is, the clothes are quite nice in it, and I can be quite shallow like that. So that's why. Cruel Intentions, right? Oh, Reese Witherspoon is in it. Selma Blair is in it.
Yes, we like Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah, I quite like her. And so she's the virginal character. And basically, the plot of the film is Ryan Philippe, being manipulated by Sarah Michelle Gellar, has to be completely taken down. In fairness, it is an adaptation unsurprisingly, a French novel, Les Liaisons Dangereuses.
Okay. That's
the
classic.
The other film has Glenn Close in it, I think, and someone else. So yeah, I just rewatched that, and I thought to myself, wow, this is properly demonic. This is really bad.
Yes.
But as I said, and even though the evil character sort of, as I said, gets her comeuppance in the end, you're like, no, that's not enough. It's not enough to take to undo all the evil that you've shown.
There's lots when I watched a really well made film the other day, by one of my favorite German directors, Tom Tuchva. I think it's pronounced. He directed Babylon Berlin, and he did Run Lola Run. But he directed the movie version of Patrick Süskind's Perfume. You remember that big hit in the 1980s?
I read the book, I think. Yeah.
And well, you may remember it's nihilistic. It's an appalling. It was a huge bestseller, a huge Euro bestseller in the vein of The Name of the Rose and stuff. Sure. But actually, when you look about, I don't want to spoil the ending, but I fear I may have to. You know, this guy goes around murdering women for their scent.
Yes.
And at the end, he gets away with it because he creates a scent so orgiastically wonderful, using the scent of these dead females, that everyone is entranced, and he sort of disappears. I mean, what a satanic plot line that is.
Oh,
okay, so it's art, but it's just debased.
I know, the morality is constantly there, you know, chipping away, right? It just chips away at what you perceive. It essentially chips away at virtue, okay? And it no doubt will probably flip. It will flip all the virtues and say, essentially, the seven deadly sins are kind of what you need. No, I agree. I could go through so many films. Again, when you rewatch them, I mean, some are okay. Some have stood up the test of time. But a lot of them, when I've rewatched, I'm like, God, I can't believe I watched this. I'll tell you.
There must have been a point.
Yeah.
Where art suddenly became degenerate. Middlemarch isn't degenerate,
any of them based on the old books won't be. They will be saved. But even that was it. So I saw someone, and even two other films, I like talking about films that have been trashed by both the left and the right. But again, remember who pushed it on you. American Beauty, right? Do you remember that movie?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, there are.
I'm enjoying it at the time,
I enjoyed it at the time as well. Don't get me wrong. And there are definitely funny bits in it. But you're just, first of all, it's another film, and there was a genre of films, American films, that trash suburbia. There is another one I'll tell you about. But so, you know, supposedly it's this middle class couple, right? Kevin Spacey and Annette Bening, I think. And they've made it, and they're living in a nice house in the burbs, and they've got one child, but they're miserable on the inside, right? And he's a classic boomer. He harkens back to his boomer days when Annette Bening used to just, you know, get topless whenever they wanted. You're like, yeah, okay, that was like 100 years ago. You're not that. And he pervs over his daughter's friend, right? And this is pushed as no big deal here, that this whatever guy older than you is perving over his daughter's friend. And I think eventually, he nearly sleeps with her, but he doesn't sleep with her. And you're just looking at it. And look, don't get me wrong, there are enjoyable bits, which is no doubt why they put that in there. And you're just looking at them going, oh my God. He basically said, I don't want any more responsibility, right? I want to jack in my job. Classic boomer, go back to my job that I had in the 60s or 70s. I don't like my wife anymore because she's a bit boring and uptight. I think I'm going to perv over my teenage daughter's friend, and I'm going to smoke loads of pot. Classic boomer movie. And Celestial Love Actually, if you go through all the couples at Love Actually, right, including the Keira Knightley triple thing, where her husband's friend turns up at her door and declares his love for her. You're like, who the fuck does that? Who does that? Right? And also, if you actually go through the relationships, there's no backstory. They all love each other for some reason that we can't understand. They don't know each other. There's no slow. That movie is also terrible.
Well, you know why? Richard Curtis is massively behind The Great Reset. Richard Curtis is absolutely in balls deep to The Great Reset. He makes films like, I mean, he's made many terrible films. I think the worst, I'm a connoisseur of his awfulness, is one called Girl in the Cafe. And it's just pure propaganda for whatever ghastly globalist cause he's proselytizing about at the time. It's extraordinary. I think it would be good to write a book, actually, deconstructing all these.
I mean, they've been written, I think. But,
but they wouldn't be as good as the one I'd write.
No, that's true. I mean, yeah.
But it's interesting what you say about, you see, that Sam Mendes film. So what's it? Tell me the name again.
Sam Mendes is terrible.
No, but what was the film you just described with Kevin Spacey? American Beauty.
Did go on. Yeah, I'm going to get the other film that I did that I don't like. Go on.
Okay.
Go on.
It's interesting. You know that I am now at the age where my daughter has friends that theoretically I could perv over.
But yes.
I think like most dads in my position, you don't. There's a kind of valve in your head that stops you. It's the same thing that stops you feeling sexual feelings towards your children. It's inbuilt. It's more than cultural. Maybe it is cultural. Partly,
I think a lot of it is cultural, and that's why these films take it apart. Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. I've never felt any kind of sexual feelings towards any of my daughter's friends.
Honestly, it just seems different weird saying that person is attractive. I mean, 20-year-old women are incredibly attractive. You know, I've
you can look at them and say that's good wife material for my son or whatever. You might do that, but you don't lech after them.
Yeah, exactly. And like,
well, I'm sure I'm not exceptional here. I'm sure that the 99% of dads feel the same way as I do. So you're right. That film is toxic because it is subverting a sensible taboo.
Yeah, and they do it. They do it all the time. And it also completely trashes suburbia, which is another thing, or even just sort of coherent marriages. And Revolutionary Road, of course, is another one that trashes, you know, suburbia. Or again, just intact marriages. That has Kate Winslet and Leonardo DiCaprio. Now, again, in a way, it's a good film to watch because they're good actors. I don't know if you remember this, but she's sort of this frustrated housewife, and you know, it's all a little bit miserable underneath. And they do this a lot. There's a lot of, as I said, boomer. Some films should come with a boomer warning. Should literally be like, warning, written and acted by boomers, reject all of the messages in this film. But yeah, there are a couple of holdouts, but you have to go back about 20 years really to watch any decent films. But yeah, perving over your teenage daughter's or 20-year-old daughter's friends is not the way to go. As I said, looking at someone and going, that person is very attractive, and I think you can do that with men or women, is completely different to, you know, what he does. But a lot of that relies on taboos, because if you read your Daily Mail, you know, there's plenty of like, you know, so-and-so took off with her stepson, or so-and-so took off with their stepdaughter, and loads of completely, as I said, degenerate kind of behavior. And it's a slippery slope as well. It doesn't take much to get down that slope, I think. Humans are weak. So that's why you have to have very strong societal taboos against it. Anyway, what can you do?
This we've helped explain to people how we got here, because I think that was it somebody in The Great Gatsby asked about how he became became poor, how he lost his money. Very slowly, and then very suddenly. So I've got the quotation wrong, but that's how it's been. That although the collapse of our civilization seems to have happened with extraordinary rapidity in the last year, yet this is the culmination of decades of preparation. We've been softened up. I mean, check out the Alan Watt podcast. The Cardinal Archbishop Vigano letter, which, I mean, It's very black, because with reading it, you think, my goodness, how did this guy manage to be so accurate at the end of last year? So many of his predictions come true. It's bleak, but at the same time, I think it's really important to know what's going on. You know, you can't bury your head in the sand. Although, unless you work for the mainstream media, of course, in which case it's your job. It is. Anyway, I think we've given our... It's coffee time for me.
Definitely.
Do you know the thing that's been keeping me happy?
Coffee.
No. Coffee, and horses.
I know.
My horse's been making me so happy.
I know. I can imagine.
Yeah, you has. I'm actually in love. I'm actually in love with my horse.
Mm-hmm. Well, you'll see that on telly next.
Do you think
I'm very. I think they're very noble, very, very, very noble animals, right? I mean, it's, yeah, I can understand that. And you're out as well. I mean, I don't have a horse, but I do have a dog that I'll bring for a walk now. He's quite funny personality, so he'll do.
I think there is solace in animals. They yeah. kind of keep a sort of sense of normality.
And they are less evil than, you know, Matt Hancock and the rest of them.
And yeah. I don't think that evil is too that evil is not too strong a word for what's going on. It is evil.
Not.
It's absolutely. And I think the more people realize this.
Mm.
Anyway, do check out Jonathan Marsley and
okay.
do check out my forthcoming podcast with my vicar, Jamie
yes.
Franklin.
I will.
It's good. Anyway, okay. great to talk, Laura. I'm really
okay.
glad you could do it. We've both started late. Lots of love.
Okay, take it easy, James. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.